Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Devotees, how nice to be with you again and again and again and again. Yes, really. I forget when I first came here, but it was in the 90s. Yes, sometime, at least 20 years ago. And there are just so many nice devotees here, I feel unable to stop myself coming back. I have tried but failed to stop myself. But anyway, we just arrived from Malaysia. There the majority of devotees are Tamil, from Tamil backgrounds, and they actually speak Tamil. So I have been speaking a bit of Tamil, not too much, don't worry. But have any of you Tamil? Any? Okay. Anyway, Vanikam, Salkyama, Salkyama, Nandra, Nandra, Nandra. Okay. Well, devotees, we are going to read a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Oh, well, it's on the board, isn't it? Chapter 3, the Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text 40. First of all, though, please just repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yes, and so what we'll do though, also, we'll, at the end, towards the end, we'll take some questions. And I have been told by reliable sources, they say that the devotees here in Singapore are very intelligent, and it is my experience like that too. And therefore, because the devotees are intelligent and interested and just fascinated with Krishna consciousness, therefore the devotees have many questions. This is what they say. And therefore, we will invite you in due course. What is it now? It's 22. So maybe, anyway, in due course, we will invite you to ask some questions. Of course, you can always put your hand up, that's fine. But you can also write down your question and pass it forward anonymously. There's a saying, well, you know, sometimes devotees feel hesitant to ask questions because they feel someone may think it's a silly, not a good question, or a silly question, or something like that. And maybe even some devotees may be amused by the question, and it could be embarrassing for the devotee asking the question. However, one important point to note is that they say The only silly question is the one which is not asked. I think it's a good point. The only silly question is the one that isn't asked. But by doing it like this, you can write down the question. Then, and you can just submit it through the devotees anonymously. You don't have to worry about that. And, you know, it's very rare that we get a silly question, actually. Sometimes we get, every so often, the same question. But that's also not a problem. Prabhupada said, repetition of a good thing is good. So even if it's been asked before, if it's something which is on your mind, something which you're interested in and you're not clear and you'd like to try to become more clear, feel free, okay? Feel free. And, well, the arati is at 7. If you write the questions down and send them in, then, you know, a little beforehand we can see how many questions there are and allow time more easily at least. Because if we just ask devotees, just put up your hand, sometimes you may get a lot of questions and there's not enough time before the RT. Or sometimes you get one of those days, no questions, and you've allowed 15 minutes before the arati for questions, but there's none. What to do? So anyway, like this, it's helpful actually, if you write them down. In English, my Tamil is not good. In fact, I cannot read it. If your English is too bad, which I can't believe, you can write it in Hindi. I'll sort of be able to figure it out. You could write it in Russian too. I basically understand Russian. Okay, so here we go then. There's the verse on the board. And just bear that in mind about the questions. Because, you know, one other thing Prabhupada said is, that if there are no questions, either you know it all, so you've got no questions because you know it all, or you're a bit stupid and you're not really interested enough. Anyway, don't worry about that if you don't have a question. But we are inviting if you would like. Right ho, so. Indriyane,
Indriyane,
Mano,
Mano,
Buddhir,
Buddhir,
Asyadishkana,
Asyadishkana,
Uchyate,
Uchyate,
Etaya,
Vimohayati,
Vimohayati,
Esha,
Esha,
Gyana,
Gyana,
Avritya,
Avritya,
Dehina,
Dehina,
Indriyani Mano Buddhir,
Indriyani Mano Buddhir,
Asya Dishtanam Uchyate,
Asya Dishtanam Uchyate,
Etair Vimo Hayat Yesha,
Etair Vimo Hayat Yesha,
Jnanam Avritya Dehina,
Jnanam Avritya Dehina,
Indriyani Mano Buddhir,
Indriyani Mano Buddhir,
Asya Dishtanam Uchyate,
Asya Dishtanam Uchyate,
Etair Vimo Hayat Yesha,
Etair Vimo Hayat Yesha,
Jnanam Avritya Dehina, Indriyani Mano Buddhir,
Indriyani Mano Buddhir,
Asya Dishtanam Uchyate,
Asya Dishtanam Uchyate,
Etair Vimo Hayat Yesha,
Etair Vimo Hayat Yesha,
Jnanam Avritya Dehina,
Jnanam Avritya Dehina,
indriyani mano buddhi
indriyani mano buddhi
asya adishtana uchyate
asya adishtana uchyate
ekai vimoheti esha
jnanam avritya dehina
indriyani mano buddhi
asya adishtanam uchyate
ekai vimoheti esha
jnanam avritya dehina
indriyani mano buddhi
asya adishtanam uchyate
The mind and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Important verse. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul. And therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places, so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all activities of the senses. And thus when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification, and as a result the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities.
Intelligence is the immediate next door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13. Yes, yatma buddhi kuna peche dhatu ke, swadhi kada tradishu bhoma ichyati, yat tirtha buddhi salile na kari chij, janeshra vigyeshu sa eva gokara, sa eva gokara. A human being who identifies, well, this is now the meaning of that verse, a human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the place of birth worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. And of course, we like cows. We're very pro-cow, indeed. In fact, we should be more pro-cow, actually. Really, because it's a very important part of our culture. But, at the same time, if we just evaluate objectively, the cows are, they're just animals. They're very wonderful in certain very important ways, but still, they're just animals. They don't have the intelligence of the human beings. Just a little experience I had. I've actually had a few times, in fact. But one time in particular, I remember in Vrindavan, if you're familiar with that very sacred place of pilgrimage, Loy Bazaar. So there's all sorts of shops there. But in the middle of Loy Bazaar, as you're going down from our Krishna Balaram temple, you know, you enter the area and then you go down, it's kind of a straight street more or less, and you go through, and then on your right, I think on your right, is a vegetable and fruit shop store type of thing. And I remember a few years ago, and it really struck me at the time, one cow came down Loy Bazaar. I was just somewhere slightly further down, and I saw, here comes the cow, and the cow saw the veggies and the fruit, and you could see a light lit in the head of the cow. Wow, look at this. Look at this. And the cow just turned and went straight into it, into the veggies. Unfortunately, the shop owner was there and hit the cow with a stick and screamed at the cow and hit the cow a few times and chased the cow away. And as that was happening, I was watching the cow, and I saw the face, the expression on the face of the cow was like, what? What are you doing to me? Now, what's going on here? It had not occurred to the cow that the veggies belong to someone. And you're not, you know, if you kind of impose yourself on someone's space, then they often, particularly, you know, if it's a shop and it's goods which are being sold, they will inevitably react strongly. But the cow had not thought of that. As far as the cow was concerned, if it's green, it's available. Something like that. And the question of ownership had not really, you know, didn't figure in the sort of the calculations of life. So they're, you know, they're very wonderful, and actually they're extremely important. But at the same time, they're animals. And therefore this famous verse, it's a very famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, is saying that some person who identifies with the body and is just interested in bodily matters and bodily enjoyment, such a person is no better, sa, he, eva, definitely, go, is like a cow, kara, or a donkey. Yeah. Which, you know, is just a different kind of perspective on the cows. So, yeah. Yes, so anyway, this is a very interesting verse. It is a very interesting section of Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada points out in the purport how the spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. As I was reading that, I was remembering Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, verse 62. Hopefully you know that verse, 262. There's a number of verses in Bhagavad Gita that if you're trying to take your Krishna consciousness seriously, you should try to learn and memorize. And this is one. Chapter 2, verse 62 and 63, they go together. But let me just read 62. Jayato Vishayam Pumsa Sangasteshu Vijayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kamat Krodho Vijayate. Here's the translation. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops. And then according to the purport that we just read, the spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses, enjoying these types of activities, and feels this is true happiness. So from such attachment, lust develops, and, you know, in the mind of such a conditioned soul, from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, happiness arises. Are you with me? Do you agree? You agree? You shouldn't agree. Because Krishna says, kamat krodho, from that lust, anger arises. Because we are not these bodies. And the experiences of these bodies cannot satisfy us because we are something else. We are eternal spirit souls. So we need spiritual experience to stimulate us positively. And where there's just material experience, like this lust, just enjoying some sense object, eat, drink, and be merry, these types of ideas, it cannot work for us because we are something else. It's as simple as that, in principle. We are something else. Just like you take a fish out of water, and you can give it money, motor cars, houses, and a nice human wife or two, and so on and so forth. A collection of Bollywood movies. And for many people who are on the material platform, as far as they're concerned, in terms of what Prabhupada says in the purport here, they will think, this is true happiness. Yes, true happiness. True happiness means seeing Kuch Kuch Hota Hai again for the 25th time. Seriously, at least in principle, this is what they think. But we are different. We are something else. We are a different item altogether. And again, the fish, you take the fish out of water and it just doesn't work. No matter how much money you give, motor cars, etc., etc., all these things, it just won't work, it can't work, because it's just of a different category. And that's all there is to it. You don't really need to say anything more. You don't need to complain that the car was not so good or something like that. That's beside the point. The point is, he's just of a different category, so it cannot work for him. So we are spiritual, we are not material, and therefore material experience for us cannot work. Cannot work. You know, interesting little example. It's a material example, but it's interesting to some degree. Oil and water. Oil and water do not mix. Cannot mix, really. You can try and mix them. Put them together, stir them up or something, try and get them to merge with each other. But in due course, they will separate. The oil or the petrol will go to the surface and the water will be underneath. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because they're just different. You can't mix them up and they just merge together and become one substance. Because they're different. They're different natures. Existentially completely different. So spirit, matter, different. And you can try and mix them up together. You know, get enthusiastic about material life and really try to get into it. Drink as much as you can and do this and do that, and just really try to absorb yourself in it. But because you're different, even though, you know, very temporarily some mixing can happen, but very quickly the difference shows itself and they just separate and doesn't work. That's the point. And this Hare Krishna movement, devotees, this Hare Krishna movement is really speaking the only way, you know, that people of course like to say it's the only way, whether it's in the field of religion or if it's in any other field. You know, we have got it figured out, the others have not.
Yeah. So, but still, actually, really, it's true. Without Krishna consciousness, real Krishna consciousness, other attempts in religious or spiritual life, they won't work. I mean, they may work to some degree, but they won't and can't really work completely and give total actual fulfillment. So this Krishna consciousness movement is very special like that. And of course the other day, Thursday, was the appearance day of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya is giving us the process of Krishna consciousness in such ways that it will work to the best degree possible in this age. Different times have different qualities. Excuse me. And this Kali Yuga, you want to practice, even you want to practice Krishna consciousness, you have to do it in certain ways if it's really going to work to the maximum. If you do it in other ways, even Krishna conscious ways, it will work to some degree, but it won't actually work completely. And this is why, if you go to India, particularly, I think I could say particularly Vrindavan, that area, you know, you've got all these old temples, fairly old temples established by the great devotees in our line. Rupa Goswami, the six Goswamis, and so on. These different great, great devotees. And there are devotees trying to worship the deities in the temples. But at least in so many cases, things have deteriorated. You know, in many cases, the buildings have deteriorated. In many cases, the worship, the standards of worship have deteriorated. And, yeah, standards of worship and just obtaining the facilities required. In other words, you need money. They couldn't get enough money. So you go to some of these old temples and they have a number of deities. A number of deities. And why? Like, you're perhaps familiar with the Radha Damodar temple. It's a very famous temple connected with us. And on the altar there are, what is it? I think four, if I remember correctly, sets of deities worshipped by great personalities. Why are they all together in one temple? Why doesn't each set of deities have their own temple? It's because as time went on, they couldn't manage financially. That was sort of like a very foundational problem. And even if they could manage financially, oftentimes they couldn't manage in terms of manpower, because people want to earn money. And if you're just worshipping the deity in the temple, it's not really, if you're after money, it's not really such a great career path usually. And so the families, oftentimes they give up and they just hire some people to worship the deity. Some like unemployed Brahmins. Yeah. We went to one temple in Varshana actually several years ago, the Jaipur temple. And they have a few Brahmins there, they're doing some worship. I asked them,
they're employed by the government, ask them, what is your sampradaya? Do you understand sampradaya? What line historically are you coming, and who are you coming from? And the fellow answered me, the pujari one, like the chief, he said, we are paid sampradaya. That's what he told me. And at first I thought, maybe this is a subtle Hindi word I'm not familiar with. But then I figured it out. No, paid. Yeah, that's what they're there for. And he said, yeah, we don't mind who we worship. If they want us to worship Durga, we'll worship Durga. Shiva, they just tell us, as long as you pay us, and we'll do it. So things have deteriorated like that. But you know why? I mean, I did mention about money and like that. But really, the real answer is because they are not practicing properly following Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. And even Prabhupada made the point that if we don't preach enough and spread the movement enough and do enough sankirtan of different types, book distribution, etc., enough, then things will deteriorate. And Prabhupada said, after some time you will wonder, why has Guru Maharaj left us with this big, big burden of this expensive temple to maintain, an expensive deity worship to maintain? Yeah. But the reason is, it's not just an economic point. The reason is because the devotees are not actually practicing the Sankirtan Yajna properly. This is the answer. And this is why, you know, those temples in Vrindavan, not all of them, but quite a number, are in a deteriorated state. Yeah. So therefore, the other day, Thursday, it was Lord Chaitanya's appearance during Gaupurnima. And it's such an important day to remind us and give us inspiration that we have to, we need to practice Krishna consciousness as taught by Lord Chaitanya. We need to do that. Yes. Otherwise, if we don't, and if we do, well, things can just boom. And everything can develop dynamically. And the temples can be wonderful places. Beautiful deity worship, inspired devotees, wonderful association in Krishna Katha. But it's all based on practicing as Lord Chaitanya gave us, the Sankirtan Yajna. Because it is the only way, according to Shastra. Harir Naam, Harir Naam, Harir Naam Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nastyeva, 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 Gatir Anyata. Yes, in this age of Kali, there's just no other way than the chanting of the holy names, but ultimately it means the Sankirtan Yajna. Yeah. Chanting japa is part of it, but really Sankirtan means taking it out to the people in one way or another. Yeah. So therefore, Thursday was a very important day. And I wanted to say a couple of words about that. Well, and here's another point. It's the same point, but it's a slightly different perspective. It's not just enough to take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, like pick up Chaitanya Charitamrita, read, and then, okay, I'm going to do it. But of course, we receive this through parampara, through disciplic succession. And in this age, means the current day, then the real representative of the parampara is none other than Srila Prabhupada. There are others, his contemporaries, godbrothers. So there are others, there's a number of them. And of course the majority have passed away now, but they were trying to practice in their own ways, chanting their rounds and so on. But they did not know how to apply the teachings of Lord Chaitanya effectively to the same degree at all as Srila Prabhupada did. Yeah. Therefore, Prabhupada's movement, it worked. It has worked, and, you know, we pray to God, but it is continuing to work. Yeah. Because Prabhupada gave us access to the movement of Lord Chaitanya as it is. Yata Rupam. As it is. And not some sort of, you know, some elements are there, but some elements are mixing type of situation. So we really have to follow Srila Prabhupada and try and develop our own Krishna consciousness and develop the Krishna consciousness movement in terms of how Prabhupada presented. Otherwise, the same things will happen to us, actually. Simple point. Yeah. We are not the anointed ones that we can do anything and we're just like the chosen ones. You got to stick at it. Yeah. Got to really stick at it. Stickability, an important quality for a devotee. So I wanted to say a little, particularly tonight, in the time remaining, a bit about that stickability and hanging in there, even when the going gets a little tough. Often people have utopian ideas about religion. Means, if I become religious, my life will become utopian. You understand utopia, that idea? Like paradise. Yeah. All problems solved. Yeah. One gentleman met me in our temple in Durban, South Africa, actually a couple of years ago now. And he came up to me, elderly gentleman, Hindu background. And he said, Swami, you must pray for me, Swami. I got headaches, Swami. You must pray for me, Swami. I said, you know, not often actually, but occasionally I get headaches too. You know what I do? I take a Disprin. That's what I told him. I take a Disprin. And he looked at me shocked, like, you're not meant to say that. You're meant to say, yes, I'll pray that your headache goes away. But many people have that idea. If we become religious, a sort of necessary result will be that our material life will become fine and we'll never get sick again and, you know, all those types of things. But it doesn't always work like that. And if you just look at the lives of so many of the great devotees, like the Pandavans, these very close cousins, cousin brothers of Lord Krishna and great, great devotees and see what they went through. You know what they went through. They went through a lot. So the lesson is not exactly necessarily that, yes, I will become Krishna conscious and I will never get a headache again. Or, you know, a financial problem again. Or some interpersonal problem again. Really, the point is that we can learn from the Pandavas that even you get into some problematic situation, you stick there, stick at Krishna's lotus feet. And Krishna may solve the problem. I mean, these problems are temporary anyway. Or Krishna may not. But what happened with the Pandavas? Of course, ultimately they were successful. But in the meantime, they transcended it all. And even though they were in difficult situation, but they were ecstatic. They were happy in Krishna consciousness. How about Prahlad? There's another great devotee who went through some extreme trials and tribulations. And eventually, of course, the Lord saved him completely by killing Hiranyakashipu. But in the meantime, he had to go through it. But he transcended it. And as a result, when his father was having him tortured and beaten and all that, he didn't really feel it. Didn't really feel it. He thought it was all like a game. And he was laughing and enjoying because he had gone above the difficulties. He had transcended. And even one devotee, Prabhupada actually mentions, one devotee approached Prahlad and said, "You know, I'm so sorry how your father's abusing you. It's terrible. I wish I could do something, but there's nothing I can do. He'll just destroy me in 1 second. But at least I'd like you to know I'm very sorry that you have to go through it." And Prahlad said, "What? Go through what?" Prahlad said, It's just a game. Prahlad said, "He's my father. He's just playing with me." So this is really the answer. The material world will go on. It's going to go on, I'm afraid. Not that it's going to turn around and become just like a paradise garden. And we will just enjoy material life by the grace of God. Now, he may do this, he may do that. That's up to him. But if we practice sincerely, we will go beyond those difficulties. We'll be unaffected and we'll be very happy in Krishna consciousness. Yes. And I wanted to mention, you know, in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, if you're familiar with them, there's one pastime of Lord Chaitanya's. It is called the Mahaprakash Lila. I imagine you've heard about it. Maybe you read about it, but I imagine devotees have talked about it before in classes here. I wanted to mention one part of it, which, you know, I'll be frank, it fascinates me. I find it so interesting, and I just keep coming back to it again and again and trying to sort of examine it in different ways. And that is the part, it's actually towards the end, or it's right at the end. Lord Chaitanya's dealing with Mukunda. Mukunda. So, you know, Mahaprakash Lila means Lord Chaitanya decided to reveal himself as the Supreme Lord to the devotees. He had not done that before. To a few he had, but not just like to all the assembled devotees. So he did it. And it went on for 21 hours. He was just calling one devotee after another and showing them, doing different sort of transcendentally mystical displays of like other forms of himself and revealing to the devotees how they had been with him when he was in other forms, like Murari Gupta, who is Hanuman actually. He's mainly in Ram Leela. And Lord Chaitanya called him and said, Murari, look at me. Tell me what you see. And he looked at Lord Chaitanya and he saw Sita and Ram. And there was Lord Nityananda fanning Lord Chaitanya. He looked at Lord Nityananda, he saw Lakshman. And Lord Chaitanya said, tell me, what do you see? And he said, yes, I see you as Sita and Ram, and Nityananda is Lakshman. It's amazing. But there's one problem, my Lord. There's one problem. Where is Hanuman? Because he's in a sort of yoga maya state. And Lord Chaitanya said, Murari, look at yourself, Murari. And Murari looked at himself and saw that he was Hanuman. Yes. So Lord Chaitanya was doing this type of thing and various other similar things for 21 hours. And he called everyone, all the devotees. Even he called Sridhar, Kolavecha Sridhar, the banana salesman, who was elsewhere. He was actually, if you know the sort of where the places are located in Mayapur, you know where Srivas Angan is. This is where it was going on. And you know that Sridhar Angan, the place of Sridhar, it's by the Jagannath temple, some distance away. It's, I don't know, a couple of kilometers perhaps. So he sent the devotees to fetch Sridhar. So he called everyone and revealed to them like this, who they were in the pastimes of other forms of himself. Right. So then he came to the end and he told Srivas, whose house this is all going on in, that okay, that's it. That's it. We'll finish. And Srivas had noticed that he had called, Lord Chaitanya had called everyone except Mukunda. Everyone else. And he said, yes, okay, my Lord, but just one thing, I think perhaps you have forgotten. You forgot about Mukunda. He's a very nice devotee. And he's just here, he's just outside. He's right nearby. Why don't you call him? Because I think you forgot about him. Of course, we must know Lord Chaitanya does not forget about anything at all. So Lord Chaitanya said to Srivas, Mukunda, you want me to call him? I'm not going to call him. I don't want to see Mukunda. I don't want to see him. He's terrible. And Srivas was shocked because Mukunda was one of the devotees. And Particularly, Mukunda was a great singer, kirtan singer. You know, here in Singapore, we have our kirtan singers. Particularly, we have Devaki Nandan Prabhu. Am I right? He's good, isn't he? He's really good. Maybe we have a few others, I'm not sure. Yeah. So, now, the thing is though, Mukunda, when Mukunda would sing kirtan, what to speak of the devotees' hearts melting, rock would melt. Did rock ever melt while you're singing? It hasn't happened yet. Still working on it. It'll come. Yeah, keep working on it. So, and dry wood would shed tears when Mukunda would sing. It's just completely unbelievable. So, well, you know, it all works out in the end. They all do live happily ever after, actually. But in the meantime, it gets worse before it gets better. But I could just inform you that there are two blessings given at the end of this description by the author Vrindavan Das Thakur, which I will tell you before, or just now as we're just beginning, so that you, as to sort of stimulate you to give your attention, because I know what attention is like. Yes. I know what the mind is like, because I have one also. And I know, you could be sitting here, and here we are, program's going on, but your mind could be thinking, how much longer is he going to talk for? What's going to be for prasada? These are the two first questions. And there can be others too. But we want you to really hear this and just take it into your heart. Because hearing is just so foundational in Krishna consciousness. If you can get your hearing together, oh, you will progress. And if you can't, it'll be something else. So look, here are the two blessings. First, anyone who hears the prayers of Mukunda will sing with him. Means with Lord Chaitanya, because he's singing for Lord Chaitanya. Second, anyone who feels happiness in hearing this narration will certainly see Lord Chaitanya face to face. Just, yeah, consider those points. And then try and give your attention, really. So there we were. And Srivas is surprised because everyone, all the devotees know Mukunda. He is the top singer and he's just a really nice devotee, extremely nice. So Lord Chaitanya saw that Srivas, you know, was so puzzled. And Lord Chaitanya said, he is the type of person. He comes to you. And with one hand, he hands you a flower, while his other hand is behind his back. So you take the flower, thinking, oh, how nice, thank you. But then as you do that, out comes the other hand, and in the other hand is a club. And he hits you with the club, while you're taking the flower, thinking it's nice. So Lord Chaitanya said like that, he's a hypocrite. He seems nice, but he's not. And Lord Chaitanya said, whoever he is with, He acts in ways which will please them. So when he's with us, oh, he acts like he's a great devotee. And we all think he is. But, Lord Chaitanya said, when he is with the Mayavadis and they say that it is all one, he agrees. And some of his family members, they worship Shiva. And when they say Shiva Stu Bhagavan Swayam, he agrees. Very good, very good. And then some other family members, they worship Durga. And they say, Durga Stu Bhagavan Swaya. And he says, yes, Jai Durga. Jai Mata Di. And some of them worship Murga. Some Tamil slipped in there somewhere. It's a Bengali family. And when they say, Murga Stu Bhagavan Swayam, he says, Jai Kartikeya. And some of them worship Madhraviran. Have you heard of Madhraviran? You got to be a dyed-in-the-wool Tamil to know about Madhraviran. As far as I know, he's like a village deity from Tamil Nadu. So Madhraviran Bhagavan Swayam, something like that. So this is very bad. He's a hypocrite. I don't want to see him again, ever. Go and tell him. So Srivas went and told Mukunda, who was just in shock. It's a little bit of a long story. We won't go through all the details, but basically, Mukunda explains to Srivas why he sometimes sort of goes along with these other people. He said, you know, the thing is, I live in a big extended family and we all live together under one roof. And some of them are Mayavadis and Shivites and worshippers of Durga, etc., etc. And I don't want to just get into fights with them all the time. So therefore I just, you know, politely say, yes, very good, very good. But I don't care. I'm not interested in what they have to say. It would just be too distracting if I tried to argue with all of them. And this is why I do it. But I don't care, I'm not interested. I just want to be with the devotees and be with Lord Chaitanya. So Srivas explained that to the Lord. Basically, something like that. And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, all right, all right. Tell him he can see me in 10 million lifetimes. Now we might think, 10 million lifetimes, come on. How about tomorrow? 10 million lifetimes, go and tell him. So Srivas told Mukunda, you can see the Lord, he says, in 10 million lifetimes. And Mukunda became ecstatic, completely, totally ecstatic. I will see my Lord. I will see my Lord. Oh, how merciful, how wonderful. And he started just yelling and screaming, I will see, I will see. And jumping and rolling and flying and just out of control in ecstasy. And Lord Chaitanya is just inside and he heard this. And he asked Srivas, what's going on? What's happening out there? And Srivas said, well, you know, it's Mukunda. He's so happy to hear he's going to see you in 10 million lifetimes. He's in ecstasy. And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, all right, just bring him here now. So Srinivas went out with a few devotees to bring him in. But next problem, they couldn't catch him. He was just jumping and dancing and spinning and rolling and flying also. So wildly, they couldn't catch hold. But they caught hold eventually. And they brought him in. And Lord Chaitanya said, basically said, in a nutshell, when you reacted like that to hearing that you'll see me in 10 million lifetimes, if there was any offense in your heart, just that mood of yours, that inspiration and enthusiasm, I will see my Lord, it just burnt up. If there were any offenses there, it just got burnt up completely. So, and Lord Chaitanya blessed him. So, you are such a nice devotee. You will always be with me. You will always sing for me. And therefore, this first benediction, anyone who hears the prayers of Mukunda will sing with him. Means be with Lord Chaitanya. And then, devotees, what about the prayers? This is what I've been looking into just recently. Let me tell you some of the prayers. At least the basic ideas of the prayers of Mukunda. It's very interesting. Listen to this. Or as we say in Tamil, Kalingala. 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 Kalingam. Am I right? Did I get it? Tell him? No? Nice and must have. Okay. Just listen. He says, Mukunda, now this is now Mukunda's prayers. In a nutshell, that my Lord, I'm so useless. I'm just like a pile of ashes. There's nothing there of any use or value. Because I have no devotion. I have no devotion. And he mentions a number of people who saw the Lord, but because they had no bhakti, they didn't understand. And they just fell down and fell away and were destroyed, basically. It says, Duryodhana saw the universal form, but he didn't understand because he had no devotion. And who knows what happened to him. Then he said, when Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, so many kings and princes, you know, non-devotees, they saw him. They saw Krishna when he did that. But because they had no devotion, it just made no impact on them. Hiranyaksha saw Varaha. But because he had no devotion, he was destroyed by him and had to take another birth. And then his brother Hiranyakashipu saw Nrisingadev, and he had no devotion. He got destroyed and he had to take birth again. I'm like that. And then he says, Kubja. You may remember Kubja from Mathura. Kubja saw the Lord and she had some devotion. Therefore, she got the mercy of the Lord. And similarly, the wives of the Vedic Brahmins, they saw Krishna, they had some devotion, they got his mercy. But at the same time, Kamsa saw the Lord. He had no devotion. He was destroyed. And then he even gives the example of Vyasadeva. That Vyasadeva, he compiled all these great literatures, but because there was a shortage of real Krishna bhakti, therefore he was frustrated. And he only came right when Narada Muni came and corrected him. And then he became properly established in Krishna bhakti. Otherwise, it was like mission impossible. Mission, anyway, just unsuccessful. Yeah. So then Lord Chaitanya agreed with him. He said, actually, you're right. You have devotion. You're saying you don't, but you do. But what you're saying about these people is right. Because they had no devotion, even though they saw the Lord, it didn't really help them. So then Lord Chaitanya gives a very interesting example. Listen to this one, devotees. He gives the example of the washerman in Mathura when Lord Krishna entered and eventually, you know, later that day killed Kamsa. So, you know the story probably. Lord Krishna and the cowherd boys enter Mathura. And they're like, you know, they're tough young boys. They're real tough guys. You don't mess around with the cowherd boys. So they're going around telling people, you know, hey, give us some sweets. All right. You want to give us some sweets, don't you? Yes. Okay. So like that, they're being tough guys. And then Krishna confronts the laundryman who has a whole basket full of Kamsa's clean laundry, very opulent, kingly dress. And Krishna tells the washerman, hey, you washerman, Dobiwala, you want? Why don't you give us some of those clothes? They look nice. All right. Yes. And the washerman just, oh, he was a demon. He was a follower of Kamsa and he had that mentality. So he insulted Krishna. That you, these are for the king. You little forest dwellers, why don't you go back to the forest and get some nice leaves and cow bark? And make some clothes out of them. That's more your style. That was a mistake. That was a big mistake. And Krishna gave him a slap in the face. And the man's head fell off. And that was the end. Good night, washerman. In Tamil, we might say, but it's probably not right. Mindum Sandipo. See you later. But much later. Padmalinge. Right, okay. So Lord Chaitanya here with Mukunda narrates this little pastime briefly. And he says, actually, that washerman performed severe austerities for millions and millions of lifetimes to see God. But because, you know, austerity makes your heart hard. So because his heart was hard, when he finally saw God, he couldn't recognize him and he offended him and he was destroyed. And, you know, we can note there's no description of what happened to the laundryman after he was killed. So, anyway, so he was just killed. He was destroyed. Yes, so, this is the story then. These are the prayers in a nutshell, the prayers of Mukunda. But you can also look them up in Chaitanya Bhagavat and read them. They're very beautiful. So anyone who hears these prayers of Mukunda will sing with him and Lord Chaitanya. And anyone who takes pleasure in hearing these pastimes will certainly meet Lord Chaitanya face to face. And, in terms of stickability, Mukunda didn't give up and say, what? 10 million lifetimes? Come on. I'm a devotee. He's meant to help the devotees. What's this 10 million lifetimes? It's not fair. I'm going to go on strike. I will not chant my rounds just to get at Krishna. See, Krishna, I'm not chanting my rounds. I'll take that. No, he just accepted it. And actually he was blissful. That even though I'm such a wretch, I'm so useless, like a pile of ashes, just nothing, fit for disposal. But still the Lord is prepared to give me mercy. So of course we're not on the level of Mukunda by any means, but we should try and follow in his footsteps. And when some challenge arises, and note that I didn't say if, I just said when, then try and remember like that and stick there and pray and don't get, sort of upset about it and get cross with Krishna. Well, what now? Oh, we have 5 minutes. And I have 2 questions. Let's see. Kindly clarify why Krishna is giving so much importance to lust in these verses from Bhagavad Gita, 337 to 341. But Krishna says the root causing all this is mentioned in 262. Okay, I don't quite get the idea. But, why is Krishna emphasizing lust? Because it is the great enemy of this world. In one of the verses, all-consuming enemy which destroys everything and you with it. Yeah. So we should try to. We all have lust. Who can get up and say, here I am, no problem, no lust, just love for Krishna. So, we all have material bodies, conditioned minds, and they carry these things. But we have to try to just engage our propensity to desire and want, to engage that in wanting to serve Krishna, desiring to serve Krishna, desiring to please Krishna. And the more we do that with the foundation of 16 rounds, as much as possible without offenses, very attentively, then gradually that lust will diminish and be replaced by actual feeling for Krishna, actual attraction for Krishna. So that why does Krishna give so much importance to lust? Because it is like the foundation of our material existence. Instead of serving Krishna and pleasing him, we decided we wanted to enjoy. It's like the root of the plant of the tree of our material existence. And we have to pull that tree out by the roots. That means take out the lust and engage in trying to please Krishna as much as possible. And the more we do that, we find that we get so much more pleasure from pleasing Krishna than we get from lusty activities. But after a while, you realize it just becomes clear. This is it. This is the answer. Okay, here we go. Last one. We know that Krishna comes to this world in his spiritual body. What about his associates like the gopis, parents, Vrindavan residents, trees, etc. in his pastimes? If any of them take material bodies, then what is the demarcation to know who takes? You know, they all descend in their spiritual bodies. They all descend. All the associates, they have spiritual bodies. But some of the people who are there are in sort of little bit mixed conditions. They are devotees who have now entered Krishna Leela on the basis of becoming perfect, or if not perfect, at least somewhat close to perfect through the practice of devotional service in the previous life. And the example is given in the 10th canto of different types of gopis. And there are eternal associates. Of course, Radharani is the main one. She was married to Abhimanyu, who was a bit of a murukh, you could say. A maha mega murukh. And we could say a lot about that, but anyway. But Prabhupada explains, our acharyas explain, their relationship was an illusion. There was no contact. In fact, it said, Abhimanyu, the husband, never even touched her shadow. What to speak of some sort of physical involvement. But those who had not descended from Goloka, but had entered the pastimes after, particularly those who were close to perfection but not perfect, that particular group, because there were some who were actually perfect and then they entered. But then there are others who are allowed to enter, but they weren't perfect. So they were married and had husbands in the sort of normal sense of the term, and had children by the normal biological processes. Yeah. But it's all part of the process of becoming actually absolutely perfect. So those ones particularly, when Krishna first of all played the flute and called the gopis to come and dance, Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, those six chapters of the 10th canto, they were not able to leave home. They were restricted physically. And some of them, they were so much anxious and desirous to be with Krishna, they died. Yeah. And in the process of that, and the extreme focus on Krishna and desire to be with Krishna, any last traces of impurity were burnt away. And they passed away and went back to Godhead. Hari Bol. So, we got more questions here, but I don't think we have time. What should I do?
Maybe one more.
One more. Okay, one more. Why not?
The second one.
Which is that one?
Yeah. Both are from me, so. But
the second one.
But the second one is more important. No, no.
Right. Good. Well done.
So much more anonymous.
In Nectar of Devotion, it is said that even if one sees a fault in another devotee, it is Vaishnava Aparad, and one must fall at the feet of the devotee and disclose. Usually I try to immediately or later when I realize, I try to see something good in the devotee. But if I have to fall at the feet of devotee and disclose, I may end up doing this at least 2 to 3 times a day. How about 10 to 20 times? I mean, not necessarily you, but it may happen. Isn't trying to repent and see good sufficient? Well, you know what? You know, the first thing I'd say is that you would have to give me the reference in Nectar of Devotion for where it is said that even if one sees a fault in another devotee, it's Vaishnava Aparad. Because I don't recall reading that. Maybe you have a different Nectar of Devotion.
I just heard from a devotee.
I mean, something similar I can accept, but not that specific idea. Because if you see fault in a devotee, and the fault is real, then, you know, take an extreme example. The devotee is smoking a cigarette. That's an extreme example. And you think, ecstasy. He's Krishna conscious. Hari Bol. No, you should see that he's doing something wrong. And you should try and help him, actually. So if you see a devotee is actually doing something wrong in fact, then don't try to imitate a Mahabhagavat who feels that, you know, everyone's a pure devotee except me, even if they're doing real serious nonsense. Don't do like that. If someone is doing some nonsense, devotee, try and help them. If you can't, for any reason, try and find someone who can. Yeah. But if you have a tendency to find fault, or sort of look for fault, and you have developed the propensity to see fault, even when it doesn't exist, this is an advanced level of fault finding. Then you got to be really careful about that, and you got to understand, I've got a problem. Then you need to take some, I mean, you could offer your obeisances, but actually what you need some sort of heart surgery. Yeah, you got a heart problem. So you need to go to the spiritual master, or at least the senior devotees, if you have a mentor, or just, you know, any more senior devotee who you know and who knows you, and get some guidance, and get some even program how to get free from that. Then, of course, in between someone seeing someone doing something really wrong, and in between that and just imagining that someone's doing something wrong when they're not, there's other categories. And another category is that when devotees do something which is not so good, but it's not really wrong. You know, it's kind of a subtle thing. For example, some eccentricity. Sometimes devotees have little quirks, little habits. You you may have read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramananda Roy, one of his brothers, was in the horse selling business. And he wanted to sell horses to the son of one Muslim king or some royal person. That royal person had a quirk, a physical quirk. He would sometimes sort of turn his head, you know, and it was like, it was odd. It was just odd. So that particular royal person wanted to buy horses from, what was the name of the boy? I forget his name. Anyways, a brother of Ramananda Roy. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Not Gopinath. Anyway, I forget. And so the royal fellow asked, so are these horses good? And this brother of Ramananda Roy said, oh, they're very good. And they don't twist their necks like that. Yeah. So they're very good. And the royal fellow understood. He's, you know, mocking me. And he was going to have him killed. But Lord Chaitanya had to personally intervene to save him from being executed. So, you know, if devotees have some eccentricities, funny little habits, and things like that, don't worry about it too much. Try to ignore it. Only when things are serious, then you may want to, you know, not just meditate on it, but take some action, do something about it. Otherwise, if it's just some little personal fault, try to ignore it is the best thing. And if you see you can't, your mind just is attracted to thinking about these things, then again, you need to approach the senior devotees. Yeah. And you can get a program like, for example, if there's someone who is the main one you like, your mind likes to criticize, then you can do some service for that devotee. You don't need to say, I'm doing it because, but just do it as service for some time. Yeah. And that will help you. If you serve someone, then you come closer to them and they come closer to you. You know, the relationship warms up on the level of the heart more. And in this way, it should help you get free of that tendency to be overly critical, unnecessarily critical. Some thoughts. Hare Krishna. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Go Premanande. And just as one little point, we will continue, I will continue a bit tomorrow morning. A little bit more. Gaura Katar. Yes.